Accession number 18575, Reel 3.
Bob Smith, Reel 3.
The officer of the reconnaissance regiment was ordered to push on regardless, which he did so, and of course, so did we. But a number of vehicles were blown up, including mine, and the replacement for mine also. A number of men were injured in these incidents, but by a miracle, none were killed. When the roadblock was finally reached, it was found to be abandoned. However, it had only just been abandoned, otherwise we would not have been subjected to so much mortar and shell fire. Later, the reconnaissance regiment and my platoon were sent a special message of congratulation by the divisional commander. A further incident a few days later was when I was again supporting the infantry in clearing a way through the thickly wooded country, when the infantry were attacked by a number of German troops supported by tanks. Fortunately, we were involved in sweeping for mines up to their position and spotted this attack and were able to pull back. Otherwise, we would have been involved with the battalion, which was completely overrun and suffered very heavy casualties, and most of them were taken prisoner.
Which battalion was that?
I believe it was the 4th Battalion, 1st 4th Battalion, the Welsh Regiment. Certainly it was troops, battalions of 160 Brigade. And the ensuing counterattack was very successful, but was too late to help this unfortunate company of the battalion. We also were fortunate in spotting the enemy patrol in time. The whole of this period in the Ardennes was one of extreme cold and very, very heavy snow. Finally, the 51st Highland Division took over the division's commitments, but were not involved in actual actions. The division was then relieved and was concentrated south of Nijmegen, ready for the resumption of the major offensive, which became known as the Reichswald Forest Battle. This battle started, I believe, about the 4th of March and was preceded by rocket firing by Canadian troops and the heaviest artillery barrage since Al Alamein. These rockets went off in a position very close to us and was deafening. The 53rd Division's role was to attack straight through the forest, which was heavily fortified as part of the Siegfried Line. Days before this had been beautiful, sunny and warm, but on the very day of the attack, down came the rain in torrents. The barrage had the effect of stripping all the trees of their branches, and the torrential rain turned the forest tracks, there were no roads, into mud baths. Mud was feet deep in places, so much so that no transport at all could get forward. Tanks, trucks, everything was just sinking in the mud. We tried to overcome this problem by sinking tree trunks and rubble and goodness knows what, but it just sunk into the mud and it was just a waste of time. The whole of the first few days was purely a foot slog by the infantry through mud, through the forest, against very, very stiff paratroop opposition. We as engineers could do very little to assist, try as we may, and so we just had to follow up on foot, leaving all our transport behind. Eventually, after days in this forest, the Welsh lads came out of it into open country and for the first time on roads. The road leading to the ancient German towns of Goch or Gosch and Cleve. Both of these had been flattened by bombers, and here we resumed our normal role of road maintenance and clearance of the rubble. However, south of Cleve, I was again with the armour, I believe again the reconnaissance regiment, but I'm not sure. And it was open country until a number of craters were found on the road, some of which had been made by British shelling, but some by the bombers, and some deliberately made by the retreating Germans. These caused great problems, as the enemy had filled some of them with tons, literally tons of TNT explosive, put mines and booby traps on top of them, and then covered them. And the lads had great difficulty in dealing with these, quite often suffering minor injuries.
How were they supposed to deal with them?
Well, all we could do really was to see, first of all, if they were booby-trapped. Secondly, remove the mines off the top and then fill them in with whatever was available. During these operations, one of the lads of my platoon was awarded the military medal. Once these had been cleared, the attacks could go forward again, straight down the road, and the division finally met up with the Americans at a place called, I believe, Calvadier or something like that. The Americans having come up from the south. Mention of meeting up with the Americans coming up from the south reminds me that I completely overlooked another occasion when the division had again met the Americans. This was at the closing of the Falaise Gap. This battle was the most horrible experience that I think I've had in my life, mainly because of the absolute carnage of men and horses and vehicles strewn all along the roads and fields through an area between Falaise and the towns of Trun, I think, T-R-U-N, and Chambois, which we term shambles. This was a terrible sight to see, and the lads were trying to clear bodies of animals and men and trucks from the road, but the stench was so great that they tried to put on respirators, but they didn't help very much. I can still smell that smell at times, even now. We met up with the, first of all, with the Poles in Chambois, and this really was a shambles, because it was here that they had taken their revenge for Warsaw. Finally.
In what way?
Well, just no prisoners. Mind you, when I say no prisoners, this applied to both sides. It was just a out-and-out slaughter, apparently. We only witnessed the aftermath, of course. The result of the conversion of the divisions through the gap meant that only the 53rd was left to make contact with the Americans coming up from the south.
Right, so
I can now revert to the operations to clear the Reichswald Forest. On completion of this clearance of the forest and the roads leading through Goch and Cleve, we were involved in two fairly wide river crossings at a place called Ism and another, I believe, called Galdern, but I'm not sure of that. Finally, the division halted on the west side of the Rhine, and we were rested and pulled back. Some time later, we crossed the Rhine, but the division was not involved in the actual crossing. We crossed where the commandos had attacked, but I forgot the name of the village on the far side. And we harboured amongst all the gliders of the airborne division that had been dropped and landed. It was quite an amazing thing to see, just prior to the actual crossing, the huge air armada bringing this airborne division in. From our harbour, we then were involved in an attacking role on the first German town we had come to, which was called Bocholt. Here, again, paratroopers had made rather stiff resistance, and we again had to cross a very small river, but it did not need bridging. Again, it could be filled in with rubble to make a causeway across. From here, I left my platoon and was more or less permanently attached to the 4th Armoured Brigade as a sapper role to assist them if need be. And it was a case of really what has been later described as swanning with the Scots Greys.
Was it swanning?
Yes, more or less. It was. The official history says it was a case of sometimes 20 miles without bumping into any opposition, sometimes held up for hours at a small river crossing or crossroads. Most of these river crossings could be dealt with by just bulldozing the banks in and making causeway across. But on two occasions I had to call up my platoon to ask them to come forward because bridging would be required. But once having done that, I would again go back to join with the Scots Greys and swan again. This more or less continued until we bumped the River Weser, or Weser, near a place I believe called Hoya, H-O-Y-A. Here, very strong opposition was encountered between Hoya and Wrentham, and it would require the support of the 53rd Division with the 4th Armoured to deal with this. And again, my platoon was involved in supplying the assault boats for the crossing of the Weser, and later in the construction of a very large Bailey Bridge over this. However, I would not be involved in any of these operations. We then reached the vicinity of Lüneburg Heath, and it was here for the first time that we came across small internment camps. But the sight of these was horrific, so goodness knows what it must have been at the larger camps that other units encountered.
Did you see in the camps?
We did find literally hundreds of shallow graves containing bodies in all sorts of state of decomposition, if that's the word, decomposing or decomposition. But fortunately, we did not hang around too long on these and cleared the town of Saltur, which I understand was later the forward headquarters of Montgomery's.
Did you find any survivors of these camps?
No. No. We did not see any civilians around that area either. Presumably they were too ashamed or frightened to be seen near there. This carried us on to Hamburg, which was the final resting place, if you like, of the division in its active role in the campaign. A few days later, it was VE Day, and we moved over the Kiel Canal up to near the Danish border. Later, here we really had no real commitments. Some of the lads were involved in guarding the literally hundreds of straggling prisoners that were around in the area.
When you're saying we, you're now talking about 4th Armoured Brigade, are you?
Well, no, sorry. I should have said that at Hamburg I rejoined the 53rd Division, or my platoon.
So you said you're on the Danish border area?
Yes.
What happened to you there?
There we were more or less just occupation troops. Some of the lads were involved in rounding up and securing straggling German remnants, but there was no fighting at all.
What was the demeanour of the German stragglers?
Very, very... the majority were very subdued, but occasionally would find a little group marching along the road singing songs, but what they were, I don't know. Certainly it wasn't the song that we'd heard before, Marching Against England. The German civilians were, strange enough, very docile and very supportive in many ways. Certainly there didn't seem to be any feelings between either the lads or the Germans.
In what way did they help you?
Of course, this was untouched country. Hadn't been through any sort of devastation at all. So I understand the cooperation by the local burgomasters was very good indeed. This really was a period of rest, so much so that we constructed a holiday camp on the shores for the division as a rest area. But before it was completed, as is usual with the British Army, we were moved. And we moved to the Ruhr, around about Dortmund. Here we did construct three major Bailey bridges across the Autobahns to replace demolished ones. And my role, of course, was now one to be absorbed within the normal field company. Very soon after this, I was posted as an instructor to the newly formed Royal Engineer Training Establishment at Knokke, or Knokke, in Belgium. I was instructor there in mines and demolitions. This finally moved from Knokke to Hameln, the Pied Piper's town in Germany, on the River Weser. And again, I was in the same capacity, but we were billeted in very, very fine German barracks. Later, I attended the investiture for my medal at The Hague by not the Queen, but the Princess of Holland, forget her name, I can't recall her name. Finally, I was returned to England as an instructor, or what they called a permanent staff instructor, to a newly formed territorial unit in Glasgow, the Scottish Beach Brigade.
Under what circumstances had you heard this German song marching against England?
Oh, we'd heard that this was their song. I hadn't heard it sung at all anywhere, but we'd heard that they had a song which they marched to, which was called We Are Marching Against England.
How do you feel now about having served in the Second World War in the Royal Engineers?
It was a great privilege to serve in this unit, especially with the Welsh lads. They were all, in my platoon particularly, the majority had been territorials before the war. They were interrelated, some brothers, some cousins. The only criticism I would have about them is why were they, so many of them, surnamed Williams, Jones, and... Oh, there's another name. Williams, Jones and...
Evans, I said.
Another one. So much so that I just gave up and called them Thomas numbers 1, 2 and 3 and 4. To finally sum up the experience, it was one that I'm glad that I had. Like all combat, if you like, troops, we were envious of the lines of communication troops with their cushy billets and entertainment, but I would not have changed places with them at all. To sum up, I would say that it was dust and bocage country in Normandy where we had to erect notices, cut your speed, dust kills, because the dust would attract enemy shelling. It was carnage and smell in Falaise. It was cold and deep snow in the Ardennes. It was mud and weariness in the Rochefort Forest. And it was motoring through northern France and Germany.
Did you see any active service in any other conflict apart from the Second World War in your RE service?
No, none at all.
When did you retire from the army then?
Because I was posted to this Scottish Beach Brigade and was supposed to be an instructor in what was termed a port operating squadron and knew nothing whatsoever about port operating, having, as I said, been what loosely could be called a combat engineer. And secondly, because this unit was being formed of two port operating squadrons, my particular squadron that I was supposed to be in was not recruiting, I found that life was very, very boring indeed. In fact, we just did nothing for nearly 18 months except go on what is called a territorial annual camp and attend a course on ship unloading at Marchwood at Southampton. But I was not a bit interested in this. As I think I mentioned before, I was envious of lines of communication troops and really didn't want to be involved in this. And I must admit, I was a little proud. I thought that I was essential to the Corps of Royal Engineers. By this time, I was a warrant officer class 2. And I thought that if I made enough noise, that they would allow me to revert to a normal engineer establishment in the regular army. But at this time, the Indian Sappers and Miners were being disbanded and a vast amount of WO2s were returning from India. And so I left the army on my birthday. That was 1951.